This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Jason Falls.
I've always considered public relations to be influence marketing because you're just trying to find a third party to, you know, borrow some trust from in order to get to an audience and persuade them to do something. And so the new media landscape has created this term influencer, but it's not a whole lot different than media relations.
Jason Falls solves problems. Most of the time, they have to do with digital marketing for Cornette, a full-service advertising agency based in Lexington, Kentucky, where he leads digital strategy and hosts two marketing podcasts, Digging Deeper and Winfluence. His work has touched a number of major brands and has been recognized with several national and many regional awards, including a 2020 Shorty Award for his influencer marketing work. He has worked with a number of the world's most iconic brands, including Buffalo Trace, Weller, 1792, Jim Beam, and Maker's Mark Bourbons, GE Appliances, AT&T, Valvoline, Humana, Rawlings, Tempur-Pedic, Fireball Whiskey, General Motors, and more. His third book, Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand, was published in February 2021 from Entrepreneur Press. He loves the kick-ass state of Kentucky, sports, and bourbon. Jason, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much, Nick, and thanks for playing my mom there and saying all those nice things about me.
Well, it's good to try different things out here during this pandemic. We need new hobbies, and playing Jason's mom has been one of mine. And we'll just leave that there because I feel like if we take the bit further,
I was going to say I'm sure she will appreciate you stepping into that role today.
Well, you know, speaking of all of that, as we got to the things that you love there at the very end, I sort of feel like, you know, talking about Lexington, Kentucky, talking about bourbon, I feel like I've been in your mind space here as I've grappled with the pandemic, because one of my first quarantine binges was Justified taking place in and around Lexington, Kentucky, and certainly visiting the bourbon in the cabinet frequently during this past year has been a big part of that.
Yeah, the bourbon industry folks like to say when things are good, you like to drink. When things go bad, you like to drink more. So it's a recession-proof industry in a lot of ways. Although the closing of restaurants and bars has been a little bit of a challenge, obviously, for us. But yeah, bourbon's a fun industry to work with, for sure.
Well, and there's been, you know, it's an interesting experience, and I realize that we're jumping right in there, but you've shared some unique branded content, I think, that sort of fits, you know, to make me sound less like I'm hitting the bourbon harder. But the experiences around some of that and some of the work that you've shared on behalf of 1792, some of the blog content about some of the, I don't know what you'd call the experience around the drink, around the cocktail, around, you know, what's in and makes up one's liquor cabinet has, I think, fit the moment in a unique way.
Yeah, 1792 Bourbon is an interesting brand that we work with here at Cornette, and it's basically, you know, sort of positioned as obviously a premium bourbon, and kind of the target consumer or the lifestyle that the brand connects with most readily is someone who is, you know, aspirational to high net worth, has a high sense of self, a high sense of fashion and style. And so when you sit down and say, okay, for my brand, what are the content pillars? What are the lifestyle connection points that I'm going to have with my consumers? What we, you know, what the 1792 Bourbon brand did years ago was they decided, hey, we're a super premium bourbon. We're very classy. We are, you know, our consumers are those that, you know, dress well, that will even get dressed up just to go, you know, to an informal gathering because they have a high sense of style and fashion. They have, you know, well-designed interiors in their homes, et cetera. So when we launched 1792 Style, which is kind of an online, you know, men's lifestyle magazine component to the Bourbon's website, to sort of attract that consumer, to feed that lifestyle with some content. And, you know, we launched this, you know, basically right before the pandemic kind of hit. And so, or about a year before the pandemic hit. So we were well into it. But then when the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, let's shift the content to, you know, to accommodate that person, that individual that we're trying to talk to. So we shifted the, you know, cocktail, nightlife, bars, travel content for that consumer to home bars and, you know, looking into your home album collection, your home art collection. So we were starting to focus on how is this person dealing with the pandemic at home, and let's write content around that, that again, feeds that lifestyle consumer, but stays within the lanes of the content that they're going to engage with. And so it's been a lot of fun sort of overseeing that and being a part of creating all that content.
You know, that, again, it was a great, I didn't even realize some of the backstory there on the existence before, prior to the pandemic, but certainly a smart pivot there. But it did make me feel a little bad about drinking in my sweatpants when I read the Style content, but I liked where its head was at.
I think the 1792 Style ideal consumer probably wouldn't be laying around in sweatpants too often. They're a little bit more, even if they're at home with nobody, they're going to, you know, dress for the how they want to feel as opposed to maybe how they want to look.
Right.
But yeah, and what's really funny is the 1792 Style, that whole sort of content pillar for the brand started out as just a cocktail guide. We actually did these little printed, you know, pocket guides for cocktails, and we engaged influencers that were in both the cocktail world and in the fashion and style world to give us tips for that ideal consumer on what type of cocktails they could make and then what type of apparel they would choose for different types of occasions, like a wedding or an after work party or something like that. So we had these little printed guides that were printed and distributed to bars and restaurants to help the, you know, the sales team say, here's a little something extra from the brand that you can give to your consumers. Have these on the bar for people, and it's a little added bonus from 1792 Bourbon. And that concept, you know, moved its way into a second version of that, which was more of an online download that was optimized for mobile, and we had some success with that. And then we realized the consumers are saying to us, to the brand, we want more of this content. And so that kind of evolved into 1792 Style, which is the sort of online magazine that sits at 1792bourbon.com.
That is, you know, you talked about the content pillars a couple of times there. Would you kind of reverse engineer for us a bit the different pieces strategically? So folks listening out there, brands might think that's exactly the kind of thing we need to do, but I'm not sure how to get there.
Sure. So let me take you through a different brand too, so to kind of make it a little bit more, I think, broadly adjustable for folks. So let's say that I am, what's a good brand to use? Let's say that I am, Let's go with Oreo. Okay. And again, Oreo has all this established. I don't work with them. I've never worked with them, so I don't know what their content pillars are. But if I'm a brand and I start to sort of do the sort of branding exercise to develop content, or if you want me to reverse engineer it. So Oreo is all about having fun. Oreo is, you know, a snack, a delight. Oreo has, I think, a very playful, you know, sort of content pillar in there. You know, some attributes that you would use to describe Oreo or where you would start and say, okay, if fun is one of the things that sort of defines my brand, then maybe we're going to build content around fun. And it can be fun things that you can do with your Oreo cookie, like dip it in different things or try different flavors. So there's fun there. But we could also extend it out and say, okay, you know, what does our target consumer like to do for fun? So if they're talking to kids, might be one of their target audiences, then they can build content around fun kid activities or amusement parks or things like that. If parents are more of their target, then let's talk about fun activities that families can do together, which again, you might go to amusement parks and things like that. But at the same time, you've got this fun pillar and you can start to say, for our target consumer, what do they consider fun? And then you can start to say, okay, here are 10 or 15, you know, sort of topic buckets, some content buckets that we can say belong in this fun pillar. And so we're going to create content around fun, and it's going to have something to do with these 10 or 12 things that we've listed in a brainstorm. So fun is one. And then let's say that they have, I'm just making this up at this point. Let's say that, delight is another sort of brand, you know, tenet or pillar or something like that. People are delighted when they eat an Oreo cookie. If you're not delighted when you eat an Oreo cookie, then you need to, you're not a human being. So, because Oreo cookies are delicious. So delight is another one. Well, how do you define delight, and how does your target audience define delight? What delights them? And so now all of a sudden, when you answer that question, you have another list of activities or characteristics or situations that you can, again, use as inspiration to build content around. So if you do this with your brand and say, okay, what do we stand for? What is our mission? What are our sort of core tenets? What are the occasions that people will consume or use our product in? There's lots of different things you can ask to define the three or four sort of content pillars that identify you with and from your target audience. Then you can start to break those down and say, okay, how does that translate to content? And it might be that those are the content pillars of a blog or a, you know, online magazine, journal, website, however you want to define that. Or it might be that one is how you talk to your Twitter audience and another one is how you talk to your Facebook audience, because those audiences are different. And so you're using that as a sort of brand content strategy for a different channel versus all of the channels, you know, come together in one, or it's one channel and all of the pillars come together in one. So again, depending upon your audience, depending upon where your audience engages with you and what type of audience engages with you on which network, you can then sort of, you know, work your content strategy that way and use those pillars to determine what type of content you're going to create. And within that content, then you create calls to action or you create messaging points that, you know, hit on the different things that you're trying to accomplish as a brand. And if you do it well and organize it well, then it has a tendency to keep your audience engaged.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written two books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with two A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show. So talk to us a bit about your latest book. And I loved your other books. Huge fan of No Bullshit Social Media. I'm still a fan of telling the story of trying to put that on a college syllabus and having my department chair raise an eyebrow, a Jason Falls-esque eyebrow back at me in doing so. But talk a bit about Winfluence. What is it? How does it work? And why should we care?
Sure. So Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand, is really my reaction to two things happening a couple of years ago that started to come together for me. One was we were building some really interesting case studies using influence marketing at Cornette, and we were doing some things that I thought, looking out at the landscape of how people were using influencers, I thought they were pretty innovative, pretty, you know, cutting edge. We were doing some things that other people weren't really doing. And so naturally, as someone who likes to share and inspire people to do really good work in the marketing world, I wanted to blog about it. I wanted to write about it. I wanted to tell people these stories. And I wanted to find other people that were doing it, not just, you know, pat myself on the back or Cornette on the back, but find other people that were doing similar things. So that interest was peaking for me. About the same time, there were a lot of mainstream media articles and publications that were coming out with stories about influencers, and they all seemed to be negative. They all seemed to even turn the word influencer into a bad word. And they were all of the horror stories of influencers, you know, buying followers, you know, faking their lifestyle just to, you know, gain a bunch of followers to be able to have brands pay them to do content. It was the, you know, the skepticism that the mainstream media has around what a quote unquote influencer is was starting to become a negative thing. Well, I work with influencers on a regular basis and have for years. I've always considered public relations to be influence marketing because you're just trying to find a third party to, you know, borrow some trust from in order to get to an audience and persuade them to do something. And so the new media landscape has created this term influencer, but it's not a whole lot different than media relations. And so I know this to be a very vibrant industry, and I know content creators out there who might fall under that label of influencer who are creating incredible content that gathers an audience online, that engages them, that they are persuasive in, you know, persuading that audience to do something. And when a brand connects with someone like that, magic can really happen. It can become a very effective way to use your marketing dollar. So the frustration with how mainstream media was portraying influencers, combined with the fact that we were doing some really cool influencer stuff, made me think, all right, we've got to start looking at influencer marketing differently. And the term influencer is at the center of that. I think just using the term influencer makes it a negative experience in a lot of people's minds and persuades businesses and brands who maybe haven't done it yet to think of it in a negative light. So my whole sort of position in the book is let's take off the R and let's call it influence marketing rather than influencer marketing, because if you look at it through that filter, now all of a sudden your horizons widen and you can say, wait a minute, my goal here, the action that I'm trying to take is to influence an audience. Well, I can do that a number of ways. It might be through someone on Pinterest. It might be through someone on YouTube or Instagram, but it might also be through a political lobbyist. It might also be through a community leader. It might be through the president of the Parent Teacher Association, depending upon your brand, your business, and what you're trying to communicate. If you look at it through that filter, now all of a sudden it becomes a strategic output of what you're doing with marketing and not dependent upon somebody with a lot of followers online.
Well, that's an interesting little secret of dropping the R there, because it does change, and that negative PR, I do feel like it focuses on this stereotype of the person who self-identifies as I'm an influencer, and some of the, like you said, the bad rap out there, and that shift. So when you focus on influence marketing, where do you begin as a brand in applying this work?
Well, it really, everything in marketing starts with your goal, right? So what are you trying to do? Are you trying to increase your awareness of your brand? Are you trying to increase foot traffic to your stores? Are you trying to, just increase conversions or sales, which is certainly inbounds too? Or are you trying to change the way people think about you? You know, there's some good communication strategies that can come into play as well. There's a case study that I talk about in the book. There's a facilities management company in Great Britain called Mighty. And Mighty had the reputation of being a mop and bucket company. They just have janitorial supplies, facility supplies. But in reality, they're a cutting edge, innovative, data company that is building hardware and software technologies for facilities management. And so they wanted to kind of reposition themselves in the marketplace. And so they wrote a report about facilities management software, I think, and they engaged 500 different influencers to review and participate in the report with quotes and things like that. So they weren't paying them anything. They were just saying, we'd like to get your thoughts on this segment of the industry. So they used all these influential people in the facilities management space. And yes, I was a little stunned to know there were 500 people that were influential in the facilities management space, but that's a different story. Anyway, so they use these people basically as sources for this report they wrote. Well, what are those people going to do when the report comes out and they're quoted in it? Well, they're going to share it with their networks, and their networks are people who are interested in facilities management. And here's this innovative, bleeding edge, technology, rich report coming from Mighty, the quote unquote mop and bucket company. Then they took 15 of those influential people and engaged them in a more traditional influence marketing approach where they had them come to conferences and speak on their behalf. They had them on the trade show floor at their booths to entertain and have conversations with people about the industry. And within a certain amount of time, I think it was 12 or 18 months, whatever their campaign was to try to reposition who they were, whatever metric they were using to measure whether or not how people thought of them, they improved their reputation by 200% from whatever their original benchmark were or was. And so you can use influencers to do lots of different things. So you've got to start with the goal. What is your goal? And then you say, okay, in order to achieve that goal, how can third-party people who have influence over our target audience, how can we leverage them? How can we connect and collaborate with them so that they can help us achieve that goal? And if you ask it in that sort of broad context, you're saying, okay, let's say that I am a CBD oil company, I'm backed by a doctor and science and all sorts of facts, whereas there's my competitors are all selling out of gas stations and convenience stores and, they're fly by night kind of things that you don't even know if the CBD oil in there is real or good. But I have, doctor recommended stuff behind me. Well, if I want to reach a consumer that's really concerned about the quality of their CBD oil, I'm probably reaching out to a little older consumer. I'm probably reaching out to someone who, maybe is, trusts doctor and healthcare professional recommendations. In that particular scenario, your influencers aren't on Instagram or YouTube. Your influencers are pharmacists. Your influencers are doctors and nurses. So now you're thinking about influence marketing through the people who actually influence the target audience, and then you can build and design programs around that. So how do we reach out to pharmacists who trust us and recommend us and say, oh, how can we leverage that person or those people to do it more? Can we, engage them to create reviews on our website? Can we engage them to do testimonials on YouTube? Can we engage them to have, collateral in their stores so that they can hand things to their patients and say, if you're going to use CBD oil for whatever you're using it for, we recommend this company's product. So again, thinking about the goal first, and then which third party can we engage to help persuade that audience to take action? The YouTubers and Instagrammers are going to fall in there, but so are many other avenues.
So now the million-dollar question with this work, and you're one of my favorite people to answer these types of questions. How do you measure it? How do you know if you've been successful with your influence marketing?
Well, again, you're always going to start with that goal. What is your goal? Because you have to measure to the goal. The problem with influence marketing or even, social media marketing these days is a lot of brands say, okay, we're going to use it to drive awareness. And then they ask, well, what's the ROI? Well, you can't answer ROI if you're trying to measure awareness. Those are apples and oranges. You know, if someone walked up to you and said, you know, Nick, what was the awareness metric that we achieved in this campaign? And you answered $57,000. They'd look at you like you had two heads. Because those two things don't make any sense. Now, that doesn't mean you can't correlate increases in awareness to increases in revenue or sales or margin or things like that. But let's measure to the goal. So if your goal is like Mighty, I want to change our reputation. Well, first of all, you have to know where you're starting. What's your reputation now? Anecdotally, you could say people think of us as a mop and bucket company, but you need to do a survey so that you have a benchmark. Okay, surveying 500 professionals in the facilities management space and asking them, you know, through a series of questions, what they think of our company. That's your benchmark that you start with. Then at a quarter or you know, a year or 2 years or however long you're going to try to move the needle on that reputation metric, you do the survey again of 500 people within the space and see how far you move the needle, right? So what you have to understand is you've got to measure to your goal and you have to have a benchmark to start with. Once you have those two things, it's as simple as just laying the right data traps along the way so that you're constantly seeing how you are moving the needle and whether or not it is working so that you can optimize along the way. And those data traps are going to give you, like, for instance, branding, brand awareness is a big one. That's a good thing for influence marketing. So you have to know how many people are aware of you when you start. You can use that a survey. You can do Q scores. You can do social listening, how many people mention you in a given week or a given month on the internet, how many people are talking about you. So you can start out with a benchmark. Along the way, you're going to capture certain data. Maybe you do, you know, surveys along the way. Maybe you check in and do your monthly social listening report. And you're going to have some KPIs, key performance indicators, like what's the volume of conversation? What's the, you know, the sentiment? Is it positive? Is it negative? Those are KPIs. But the PI that you care about is how many people are talking about me? What's my awareness? Right? So you have one metric that really answers the goal question that you is your the PI. And then you have a bunch of KPIs that are indicators that you're going in the right direction. And you look at those data traps along the way, maybe it's weekly, maybe it's daily, maybe it's monthly, so that you know how you're doing so that you can tweak and adjust if things aren't looking like they're going up into the right or whatever direction you want them to go in. And then at the end of it, you just look at, you know, your benchmark, you re-measure around that benchmark and see, okay, how far did the needle move or how far the continuum of progress are we? And then you know what you got out of it.
I love the idea of data traps. Certainly makes me smile. And as I talk about smiling, it makes me realize that it is time to ask you, Jason Falls, for a brand that has made you smile recently.
I love it. I'm actually going to use a brand that some people have not heard of. And it's very niche, but I am talking into a Blue Yeti microphone, and I know you are too. And for podcasters and broadcasters and whatnot that are in the pandemic working from home and whatnot, the Blue Yeti brand of microphone is fantastic because it's USB, so it'll plug into your computer. But even better, I'm an old radio broadcaster, so it has a headphone jack underneath it. That plugs into the microphone, not your computer. And what that enables is it enables you to hear yourself. And as a broadcaster, I love to be able to hear myself to know that I sound good when I'm talking into these microphones. And Blue Yeti has made me smile because every time I use it, I remember the old days of using just Apple earbuds plugged into the computer and not being able to hear how I sound. And so every time I talk into this microphone, it makes me smile. And I just bought my second Blue Yeti to have one at the office as well as one at home. So it makes me smile because I have two now.
They are great microphones. I sound like this is some influence marketing happening right here, but it is not. It is just our casual brand smile. Jason, where can folks go to learn more about you, the book, who you are, what you're doing?
So I'm Jason Falls everywhere. JasonFalls.com is my core website where you can find the two podcasts. You can find links to the book. If you want to go straight to the book, you can go to winfluencebook.com. That's the page on my website where you can go to Amazon. You can go to Entrepreneur Press and buy it there, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. I'd love for people to get a copy of the book. Let me know what you think. I'd love an Amazon review. I don't care how many stars you give me as long as it's honest, because I love the feedback.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Jason, thank you for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick.
And before we go, as a reminder, if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.